Hello, and welcome to the Accreditation Matters podcast. This is a subseries focused on the food sector, and I'll be your host. My name's Colin Christmas. I'm the IAF Food Working Group co-convener, and also a member of IQNet Association. And today, we're going to look at our first podcast, which is the role of accreditation in the food sector.
Accreditation is a way of life.
One of the actions that organizations are taking is to focus on issues of pressing importance.
What the customers really want out of their accredited certification.
I believe we have an impact on everyday's life.
It's important to be inclusive. It is important really to be open.
And that will be one additional way to ensure that the voice of industry and user is heard and recognized.
So, welcome to the Accreditation Matters podcast. I'd just like to thank everyone for joining us today. Today we're going to start off with podcast number one for the food series. So this will be a series of podcasts looking at how the food sector is working with accreditation and why that's important for the industry. So on today's podcast, we have Wolfram Hartman sitting next to me. Wolfram is the head of the Competence Center of Standards and Regulatory at DAX. Online we have Vani Bambri Arora. She's the technical advisor at UAF. We have Kylie Sheenan here, who's the General Manager of Operations at Jazzhands and the IAF MLA Chair. And last but not least, we have Skip Greenaway, Chairman Emeritus at Eagle Certification Group and also on the Board of Stakeholders for the FSSC Foundation. So with that, I just wanted to kick off and start with Wolfram and just want to understand a little bit more about the role of IAF, ILAC, what it is and what it's not.
Okay, yeah. Hello from my side. To come to your question, the role of IAF and ILAC, basically both are associations of accreditation bodies. And thus they take care of harmonization of accreditation practice. They do that by certain mechanisms, they do that by rulemaking for themselves. So they are not directly monitoring the conformity assessment bodies as such, but they indirectly have influence on their performance by giving rules to the accreditation bodies and thus the CAPs themselves. There's a difference between IAF and ILAC. So there's two associations. One, IAF, is taking care of certification bodies and validation and verification bodies, whilst ILAC is mainly taking care of laboratories, inspection bodies.
Thanks, Wolfram. Really appreciate that that summary, and I think that ties in nicely to taking us about what the role of ILAC and IAF is, and building upon that with the MLA, the multilateral agreement. So Kylie is the chair of the MLA. Can you give us a little bit more about accredited once, accepted everywhere? Give us a little bit more of what that means and what that is.
Sure. Thanks, Colin. So the purpose of the IAF multilateral recognition arrangement is to allow for the recognition of accreditations between signatories. Now they're accreditations of conformity assessment bodies that are undertaking certifications or validation and verification. So the MLA covers both. Of course, under certification we have product certification, management system certification, and certification of persons. So it covers off on all of those types of conformity assessment. So through the recognition of the accreditations amongst the signatories, there's also the ability then to recognise the accredited certifications that are awarded by the conformity assessment bodies accredited by signatories. And so that allows, it facilitates trade because of the recognition of those certificates globally. Similarly, with the ILAC MRA, there's the recognition of inspection results and test reports internationally because of the recognition of the accreditations under the ILAC MRA. So what does that mean? So it means that we facilitate trade. Through that process, we have a number of different regulators, scheme owners, etc., that recognise the MLA and its results. And we currently have six regional accreditation groups that are signatories under the MLA, and also 84 accreditation bodies that are signatories, and they cover 93 separate economies globally.
Well, that's great, Kylie. That's very comprehensive and good to know about what the role of the MLA is. Thank you. Thank you. So from understanding a little bit more about what IEF is and what ILAC is and what it's not, to understanding the MLA, I just wanted to go over to you, Vani, just to give us a little bit more information about conformity assessment. In technical terms, that's the ISO 17000 series. So I wonder if you can give us a little bit more about what standards are within the 17000 series and how that works with the chain of conformity assessment.
Thank you, Colin. And as we know that the international standards are generally published by International Organization of Standards, which is widely known as ISO. And what ISO does is that they group different standards which have the same objective and then control them with a thousand of giving a number of thousand after that. And we have different standards, like 9,000 stocks about quality management system, 22,000 stocks about food safety management system. Similarly, ISO 17000 series is more applicable to certification bodies and accreditation bodies. And it's not very familiar with the industry. It's if I say that it's not common in the industry, this series, but it's very important for the conformity assessment because all the standards which are relevant to the certification and accreditations are grouped into this series. And among this, the ISO 17000, which is ISO IEC 17000, that is the base, because this particular document is the terminology document which defines how the different terminology is used and documented in all the 17000 series. It's not exactly the dictionary meaning, but they are related to the meaning. They define the concept specific to the field of conformity assessment. And while explaining the standards today, the whole group of standards which are there in 17000 series, they are applicable. There's a structure, like when we have recently understand that how Kylie explained the MLA and MRA structure. So the standard in this series, which is applicable to the accreditation bodies, whether they are doing the management system or product process accreditation, or they are doing the inspection bodies accreditations. So the standard which is applicable to the accreditation bodies is ISO IEC 17011. And then we have further standards which are depending on the kind of conformity assessment these bodies are doing. Like if you are doing for product or process, which is coming under most of the food safety schemes like BRCGS or SQF or IFS, then the applicable standard to the certification bodies is ISO 17065. If you're doing management system, then the applicable standards to the certification bodies is 17021. We are also talking about nowadays about the personal certification, the competent people working in the industry, competent auditors doing the conformity assessment. Then the applicable standard for personal certification is 17024. For inspection bodies, if you are doing the inspection, not the certification, then applicable standard is 17020. So these are the different standards depending on the kind of conformity assessment role you are doing. And then further, we have standards which are 9,000, 22,000, all these standards are there, which have to be implemented by the industry. So this is whole structure of standards, which is applicable to the complete umbrella of conformity assessment. And they give the assurance finally to the consumer and the customer that the food which is coming out has a system to ensure safety. Thank you.
Barney, thanks for that. That's really good to know about the 17,000 series and the chain of conformity assessment. I see it as the layers of the client that needs the certification, the CB, the certification body, accreditation bodies above that, and then at the top is IEF and ILAC. So very nice summary there. Thank you very much. So we're getting a feel of what's going on within IEF, what the organization's doing, the standards that we use that are very important for conformity assessment and the chain of standards and how they kind of fit together. So I just want to get now into the certification piece. Really, with certification from accredited certification bodies in the food sectors, it's a broad range of things, really, within food. And there's a lot of subsectors within food where certification and accreditation is used within the food industry. So maybe Wolfram, if you can give us a little bit of a summary of what you see food and accreditation being, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, but let me try, because answering to that question might be one of the reasons why this is not just one session, because or just the start of four sessions of accreditation matters for the food sector. So I try my best, but starting with certification bodies, as you mentioned them, and Vanya already mentioned the ISO 22000, one concept and one major issue is food safety. No way around that. We've got certain ways of dealing with that. There's product or process certification as well as management systems with the ISO 22000 world, and that's a great cornerstone of what the certification bodies are doing. But on top of that, there's quite a lot more. There's all sorts of quality that food can have and that can be assessed for conformity. There's all sorts of sustainability issues, foremost organic being a global issue, being regulated and being quite often certified by private conformity assessment bodies. There's issues like fair trade, so every one of us being a consumer knows about certain labels that are part of certification and accredited certification to that end as well. And let alone that food industry itself needs certification on top of everything else they need to lend to the supply chain, just talking about environmental management systems, about IT safety that the food industry needs as any other industry. But come to think of that, you mentioned certification. On the other hand, we have got the laboratories and inspection bodies have been taken care of by ILAC. So there's quite a lot of what laboratories are doing. Mainly talking about pesticide residues, for example, or testing for genetically modified organisms in food, and so on and so on. So laboratories and inspection bodies play a big part in that circus too. So just giving a few examples, and that said, coming back to the management systems, there's always the question how to certify that, how to audit that, and then we are talking again about integrated management systems where you say there is ISO 22000 for the food sector, but there might be a case in point for 9001 or 14001, etc. And that's where IF plays a part. There is a rule on that, IF MD 11, if I'm not mistaken. So whatever long the list, I guess we can make that even longer, but that's for starters.
No, that's great, Wolfram. I think that's key. So really, when we talk about food, there's just so many different subsectors that we touch upon. Obviously, food safety is a big one. That's one of the key components within the food working group within IEF. But then again, I think it's just really important to say that it's not just food safety for under the IEF governance. It's really hugely more than that: quality, organic, sustainability, health and safety of workers, the environment. You mentioned IT, which is another key one. So the food sector is a big representation of ISO 27001, and all the other standards, the other management systems are working together. And I think for me that's interesting, because we talk about integrated management systems at the same time that the UN has a definition of food systems. So the UN and the food organization, the FAO, for Food and Agriculture Organization under the FAO, they really talk about the importance of an integrated model. And that's very important as well, because we see that with the ISO management systems being integrated in the food sector. And ultimately, all those components fit well together and play a crucial part as well. Last but not least, Wolfram, you mentioned ILAC. There's the standard, which is 17025, which is for the accredited laboratories. So a lot of the testing inspection data is reliant upon accredited laboratories, and that's really important for trade, for moving food around the world, for across borders, heavily reliant upon accredited laboratories as well. So all those parts plan a good integrated model within food, within the IAF and ILAC as well. So we've talked about the kind of the broad spectrum of the food sector, and I mentioned one of the key parts is within food safety. So I think it's important today that we get into a little bit of the history of food safety and accreditation, and that's why, Skip, we welcome you to the podcast, because you lived and breathed this in the 1990s, and I think maybe it's a good history lesson to understand where it all started with for certification and accreditation in the food industry, because that was part of your business model, and we'd love to hear that story.
Thanks, Colin, and I'm here today because I spent 35 years in food manufacturing. In the last 18 years, I'm on the other side with certification and accreditation. And to me, part of that, I'll call it that journey, the 35 years, was, you know, also being involved in a family business. And when I first joined the family business in 1972, I had the privilege of being one of the largest hamburger suppliers in the United States. Our main customers were Taco Bell, Burger King. We did the Arby's roast beef. And in that activity, we also happened to make a few mistakes. One of them was I took that family business and went bankrupt in 1981. And I don't say that because I'm proud of it. I just say because it really has helped me, you know, understand when we make a mistake, how do we find the right opportunity to correct that mistake. And for me, the certification and the ISO piece of it is part of my history and part of why I believe so strongly in IF and ILAC and all the activities around food. And for me, the key, we took the first meat company to ISO 9002 certification, you know, in 1996. And the start of that was as a result of our technical manager, Roger Roth, came to me because we were struggling with the result. I mentioned Burger King as well as Taco Bell. And in the early 90s, they started up a vendor evaluation. And we were proud of the fact that our vendor evaluation activities was involved in HACCP as well as TQM. And for us, we started with a experiment with the USDA in the 80s, and we really believed strongly that it made us a better company. But unfortunately, in the United States, the USDA, the unions, at that particular time, put pressure on Congress because they really thought that HACCP was going to eliminate their jobs. And so we had to walk away from that activity, but we saw the value of HACCP. And then in 1994, I was exposed, as I said, Roger Roth had done some experimentation with the failure for us in TQM, where we weren't satisfied with it. And there was Dr. Catherine Adams, who was the director of quality at Campbell Soup, who was very committed to merging HACCP with ISO 9000 series. And so I was fortunate enough that Roger said, Skip, get off your butt and go to the seminar to find out, you know, a little bit more what I think is something very, very positive. And for me, it really was eye-opening in terms of, and as a result of that particular activity, you know, we became the first ISO 9002 meat company in the United States, you know, to be certified. And it really made a difference. And when I say it made a difference, we talk about, you know, standards, we talk about IAF, we talk about ILAC, and for us it wasn't mandatory. We did it because we knew that it was going to make us a better company. And I think that's the other piece that too many people think that ISO certification and accreditation is really only for people that have to mandate it, and it really isn't. It made us a better company. And to me, the bottom line is critical, being the president and CEO of family businesses my whole life, you know, I realized that, yes, we, you know, need to talk about trust, transparency, and teamwork, but we also have to make sure that we make money. So the financial advantage for us as a company in the food industry, you hear large volumes because everybody has to eat. Most companies have some fairly significant volume. And for us, we were a large volume supplier to all the big fast food chains. And our top line was very significant, hundreds of millions of dollars. But the bottom line was pretty slim, basically about 1-2% net profit on an annual basis. And when we became ISO certified, we went from a 1-2% to a 3-4%. And we associated that with the processes and a consistency to the 18 requirements for 9002. That was really the start of our benefit. Also, I mentioned the idea that we struggled with some of the comparisons of the vendor report that Burger King and Taco Bell gave us. And we perceived that we were at the top. And when we got our first results, we were closer to the bottom. And what I'm proud to say is that after our ISO certification, we moved all the way up, you know, to either not necessarily number one, but at least number two or number three. And in addition, Gordon Food Service is one of the largest distributors in the United States as well as Canada. And they initiated a supplier vendor also report card, and in that particular category for us, the meat category, for 6 straight years we were number one. And then out of the 6 years, 2 out of the 6, we also became number one total supplier to their whole network of suppliers, which in those days, you know, amounted to hundreds and hundreds of vendors. So for me, you know, I guess I close my comments in terms of related to the manufacturing side that made us a better company, but it also helped me lead myself into being involved in IAF and ILAC and the whole ISO, you know, family of network, and what it means in terms of to not necessarily, you know, do something because it's mandatory, but do something because it makes you a better company. And so for me, it also was, you know, very important that all of the organizations and the structure that you've heard us talk about today, in terms of whether it be GFSI, whether it be the automotive, whether it be aerospace, you know, it's not just food safety, you know, it's also aerospace safety, it's also automobile safety. And my point is that it really is critical for all of our customers to recognize that the independent oversight, you know, really has the respect of the regulatory people as well as the governments. And in my opinion, it really does allow for us to be certified, to be tested, to be inspected, and to be accredited once and truly accepted everywhere. And that's the piece, in my opinion, that I hope that everybody can get out of this podcast today. Thank you.
Skip, that's great. It's really good to get that history lesson. Really appreciate that. So I don't believe that everyone knows that that was how it all started with the ISO 9001 series. That really developed in popularity out of Europe. And then at the same time, like you said, USDA promoting HACCP in the US. And those two systems coming together. So that was the early to mid-90s, and it was the journey for standardization. I think that's great. It's like you said, it was a voluntary initiative. So a lot of these organizations were doing this not because it was mandated, but because, like you said, it can make you a better company.
And Colin, I think I want to add that to me what impressed me with Dr. Adams, you know, in terms of her seminar, she emphasized the fact that ISO 9000 series really came out of Europe. You know, back then, you know, United States, we really didn't know about it. And HACCP came out of the United States. HACCP was developed by Pillsbury along with NASA for the space program. And it was their way to assure that our astronauts in space wouldn't get sick. So to me, Dr. Adams really pushed, you know, this merger of the idea of the 9000 series could be, you know, that management, you know, system that we needed that linked with HACCP, which was the food safety side. So we had, and for me being a businessman, we had that business piece with 9000 and then we had HACCP that really merged together and really made the difference, you know, in the food companies in the United States. And I'm willing to say in Europe too, because HACCP became a worldwide, you know, process, just like, you know, to me 9000 and all of the standards have become worldwide. So thank you.
No, that's great, Skip. It's really good to know that kind of where the certification journey started with food safety. And I think just continuing on that food safety journey, so that's where it started. Then there was an evolution with industry standards being founded by the retailers. There was a lot of different standards out there and a lot of competing standards and a lot of confusion in the marketplace as well. So, Barney, maybe you can continue the history lesson that we're going through today and tell us a little bit more about the industry standards and how that worked and what the retailers did to address some of the concerns with lack of harmony and a harmonization approach that came with GFSI.
Thank you once again. Actually, it's very interesting to understand the difference of this complete food safety framework, I will say food safety framework. But before I start explaining the different private standards, food safety schemes, international standards, I just want to mention in one-liners the difference between these international standards, food safety schemes, and regulatory requirements. We have international standards like 22,000, we have food safety schemes like BRCHGS, and then the regulatory requirements which are there like USFDA, and in India we have FSSAI. The regulations are developed by the regulatory bodies of the country. Now these regulatory bodies, they are there to ensure that the food is safe. But these regulatory requirements are mandatory and minimal. They are enforced by the law. Since they are minimal, there are more expectations by the retailers, the consumers, and everybody want to ensure that whatever the food is coming to their country, the food which is coming on their retail chain, that is safe. So more and more focus was there on the food safety standards. And they also want to ensure other things like which were not addressed in many of the regulations, like social responsibility, workers issues related to workers, and all that. So all these gaps were filled by the food safety schemes. And this is about the regulation. Then on the other hand, we also have international standards, which are generally developed by the working group, which are comprising of the national standards bodies. And ISO 22000 is one of the international standards. And food safety schemes are developed by the stakeholders. They are voluntary, but become a compulsion due to their insistence by certain markets. So with all this, now I want to explain that, as I mentioned, that there were certain regulations, there were certain standards, but still retailers find that there is a gap between the requirement and how they can ensure the food safety. So the first private food safety standard was developed entirely and collective by the retailers, the retail association. And this was the BRC technical standards. And BRCHS represents the interest of major retailers of the UK. I think the first standard which was out, which was formed, was in this whole consortium was formed in 1992, and they published the first standard in 1998. But this was not just one food safety scheme which was developed by the retailers. In 2000, a group of German food retailers also developed a scheme which is called IFS, International Food Standard. And this became the first pan-European scheme. And so parallelly in the world, many of the food safety schemes were developed, SQF, Global Gap, which is for the primary produce. And industry was observing at this time that there were too many food safety schemes, and they were just facing the audit fatigue. As retailers were performing inspections, audits by themselves or through third parties for various schemes. And these schemes and standards, they were not, they lacked the international certification and accreditation, resulting in incompatible auditing results. And recognizing the global proliferation of food safety schemes and the potential of fragmentation of global supply chain, the Global Food Safety Initiative was established in 2000. And it is a member-based organization of chief executive officers of leading international food chain. The aim of GFSI was to harmonize the food safety schemes using the benchmarking model. And the aim of GFSI, among others, is to facilitate the benchmarking of food safety schemes. The ambition of GFSI is to strengthen the harmonized food safety system so that they are able to feed the growing global population and develop market that can deliver the safe food. To date, there are many standards which are under this GFSI framework, like BRCGS, we have IFS, we have Global Gap, we have FSSC 22000, SQF, and they all are recognized by GFSI. And there are more than 100,000 sites certified. That is what in the, what is there in the I don't have the exact data, but that is there in the public estimated that there are more than 100,000 sites which are certified under this GFSI recognized food safety schemes. And as I mentioned that we also have this is about the food safety schemes, and the applicable standard was 17065 for certification bodies. Parallelly, we were also having ISO 22000, which is food safety management system, which was first published in September 2005. This was also the standard developed by ISO TC 34 SC 17. And they have the national expert and also supported by the Codex Alimentarius Commission, which is a United Nations bodies. So this ISO, which is an international standard, made it easier for the organizations to implement the Codex HACCP along with the systems requirement, which is 9,000 there. So all these different schemes and standards were there, and they were using the international standards, which were again developed by the ISO, like if they are going for as I've explained earlier, if you are using the 22,000, an organization decided to go to ensure the food safety and want to use the route of 22,000, they will go, the CB has to be 17021-1. If they use, they decided to use BRCGS or SQF, then they have to choose a certification body, which is 17065 accredited. So this is the whole framework. And all this is to bring the confidence in the consumer and facilitate the international trade. Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Thanks for that really good summary of where we moved from. So we started off with the industry with the 9000 series plus HACCP, and then we evolved into the retailer, the standards that were founded by the retailers, with GFSI coming in to do a really important, take a really important leadership role in the food industry to harmonize these standards, because there were so many different standards out there, and obviously audit fatigue with retailers doing their own supplier-based audits, which obviously created a lot of duplication and audit fatigue, like you mentioned. Last but not least, ISO 22000 then was published in 2005, so really good summary to understand the kind of journey of where we've got today. And the role that the IAEF play with certification and the accreditation piece for all of those standards, for the international standards and for the food schemes that's recognized from GFSI as well. So, Barney, thanks for that. And then I just wanted to wrap up today's podcast with just to come back to you, Kylie, to say, okay, we have a lot of different scheme owners in the food sector, not just food safety, but in other subsectors of the food industry as well. And they fall under the accreditation piece with the IAEF, and we've talked about the MLA. So can you just tell me a little bit more about the endorsement process for scheme owners? Obviously, with quite a few scheme owners under the IAEF, why is it important for them to have an IAEF MLA endorsement?
Sure. Thanks, Colin. So the IAEF has a process for extending the scope of the MLA, and that's for both public standards, like any of the ISO standards, but also for the private schemes, and that includes those types of schemes that Barney's just outlined, the BRCGS, IFS, etc. So we've, for some time now, recognised how important it is to have the ability to recognise the equivalence of certification. So where a scheme owner adopts our framework, so requires their CABs to be accredited by IAEF's signatories to the MLA, and where they're willing to become a member and to become involved in the development of our documents and our processes, we allow their schemes to be endorsed. Now, we have a set of criteria that we apply to that particular process, and we evaluate their schemes against that criteria. And some of those criteria include the global reach of the scheme, the acceptance of the consumers and customers in the marketplace. And so we really have to be sure that it's a valid, a robust scheme that we can actually recognise. And then by going through that recognition process, it means that those schemes become part of the peer evaluation process, which of course underpins the MLA. So those schemes are sampled through the peer evaluation process. And so where a peer evaluator goes to evaluate an accreditation body, they will look to see how the accreditation body is actually accrediting CABs, or conformity assessment bodies, against those particular schemes. So it gives the scheme owner and consumers more confidence in the performance of those CABs and those accreditation bodies that are involved in their scheme.
Kylie, wonderful. I think that's an important way to wrap up this podcast today, to tell us about the importance of the MLA endorsement and why scheme owners see the benefit of that, and why that allows them to truly be a global player in the food safety world, or any other food sector that they're working in and looking for the MLA endorsement. So a lot of benefits there. So really just to wrap up, today's podcast was really just to give us a bit of a flavor, an introduction to what IAEF and ILAC do in terms of supporting the food food sector for certification and accreditation. And I hope you've enjoyed that. There'll be future podcasts that will expand on some of these subjects that we've touched upon today. So look out for those. And I'd just like to thank the members of the podcast today. So Kylie, Skip, Wolfram, Varney Online, thank you for your time today. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Look out for the next one. And I wish you all the best. Thank you very much.